Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. They are the people who raised you, your parents, but many adult children find out sooner or later that the roles reverse. They often find themselves parenting and caring for elderly parents. Even with healthy older parents, it is not always easy. And tonight we're looking at parenting your parents as they get older. Challenges and resources on deck tonight. My guests are Aurora Delspin-Jones, Deputy Director for the D.C. Department of Aging and Community Living, and Muriel Garr, financial expert and co-host of Beyond the Bling on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have some questions, if you have comments, if you have concerns about caring for your parents as they get older. Aurora, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And Muriel, good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's always good to see you.
Always good to see Muriel. Yes, indeed. Let me first kind of set the scene for children who all of a sudden find themselves in a position where they need to care for their parents. What are the first signs for adult children, Aurora, that their parents need some extra help?
Well, for me, in my experience, and I talk from experience, my mother was 100 years old and when she passed, but I cared for her for the last 20 years of her life, and I found that she needed assistance in getting financial matters in order. Her memory was going.
How old were you when this was happening?
Well, I'm a proud 64 years old now, and she's been deceased for the last 3 years. So that was about, I was in my 50s.
You were in middle age.
Right.
So
you
knew that this was happening. You knew that these things were coming.
We didn't live in the same home. I knew it was coming, but I did not really see it happening. I walked in the house one day and I noticed things were like disheveled. And I found my mother on the kitchen floor. And she could not get up. She was fine, but she had fallen, and she couldn't get up on her own. And it was from that point that I knew that she needed assistance, that someone needed to be there. Because, they want independence. So if you're talking to them on the phone, or even if you're going by, you call first, you don't see those signs because they're doing a good job in masking.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start looking at things because you know they get routined in doing things and you see things a little bit out of place, you know, you start seeing that they're answering you. Oh, yeah, fine. You know, things are well, you know, and then you have to look a little bit deeper. Well, Mom, why is this here? It usually is over here. Oh, child, sometimes, you know, you just forget things and you put them away.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just look at little things like that. The routines start looking different.
Mm-hmm. Let me, Muriel, you, in addition to obviously being an expert on financial matters, but you also have an older mother that you're caring for. When did you begin to realize that your mother needed help?
Actually, it wasn't that I really realized it. My situation was not like Aurora's situation at all. I ended up having to take care of my mother when my father passed unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
And with the passing of my father, there were some things associated with the home that brought to the attention of the family that my mother could not live in the home by herself.
Like what?
The home in and of itself, there was an outward appearance that things were all together, but the inward, inside the home, was severe hoarding. It were major safety issues. And as a result of those major health and safety issues, it was a conversation with myself, my son, and my daughter, who both came to me as we were caring for my father in his last days in intensive care. And both my son and daughter, who are a grown adult, sat down with me and said, "You're going to have to move Grandma in with you."
And I would imagine, even with your children, you know, talking to you about that, I'm sure that was still something that perhaps you really were not ready to address.
Was not ready to address that. I had to deal with two things at the same time: an unexpected loss of my father, making healthcare decisions, and then at the same time, I had to all of a sudden go from being this person that was moving up the corporate ladder, had plans, had my 6-month, 1-year, 3-year, 5-year goal, and now all of a sudden I'm caring for a grown woman, because our parents are not our children. And then on top of that, I'm having to deal with a matter that's not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is money, not forms of mental illness, which hoarding is a form of a mental illness, which had been masked for a prolonged period of time and not really dealt with.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about taking care of our parents as they get older. How do you do it? How do you prepare for it, not only logistically, but also financially and emotionally? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Cecilia, calling from Alexandria. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, my question that I have is, my father passed away in March. He was 91, and my mother is 88, and she's in a facility in Georgia where she lives. But I've noticed that there's a large percentage of caregivers that I believe they pass away before the people that they care for. And I'm just wondering what can be done to give assistance to caregivers so they can actually have the ability to also take care of themselves, because it's overwhelming, I believe. And I just want to get some more information about what type of services are available for caregivers at this point.
Aurora?
That's generally what happens. Caregivers get overwhelmed, and you need respite. That's the first thing that can help, is respite. Respite is a period of time that you are away from the anxieties, the frustrations, and the immediacy of caring for someone. It's a time for you to relax, calm down, claim your thoughts, and you are able to identify resources. In Maryland, Baltimore, I think you are.
Alexandria.
Alexandria, Virginia. Well, whether you're coast to coast, there's a line called Elder Care Locator. If you go online, just type in Elder Care Locator. Put in your zip code when it calls for it, and it will bring up all of the caregiver services that are in your region. Now, if you're looking and you're a long-distance caregiver, you can still go to the same line, put in the zip code where the person lives, and it will bring up resources. But for caregivers, respite is the first thing you want to look for. Respite agencies, there ought to be social service, respite services in your community. But getting away from the situation and then creating a network of services. And that probably going to be not only things that you will pay for, but there are service programs for case management, case assessment, even for rec social, or if it's adult daycare.
Rec social?
Rec social, recreation socialization programs.
Okay, and what is that?
That's a program, or that's a service whereby you can engage with other people. We often deal with isolation. When caregivers start doing a lot of work, they withdraw from their
Immediate
social
circle of friends.
So you have to get yourself engaged. And if you get your loved one if they're seniors, into an adult daycare program, mm-hmm. that becomes a area where they can get recreation socialization for them as well.
Let me ask about, often when this issue comes up, there are health issues, whether the physiological or mental health issues. And you want to make sure that your parents are, whether they're living with you or they're in some other kind of facility where they are comfortable. But what about when your parents are concerned about losing their independence and you have to then parent them? Is that an accurate statement, parenting your parents when you need to make decisions for them that they normally made for themselves?
Sure, sure. I often tell people to try to get them to start talking about it before dementia really sets in, letting them maintain as much control as they can, but you overseeing it is probably the first phase. But there does come a time when you have to become the parent. My mother was taken to the bank by a stranger who used a relative's name, and she just wasn't thinking. She rode with him to the bank, mm-hmm. got $300 out, and they brought her back. Thank God they brought her back. Mm-hmm. However, there are times when you have to take the reins, and you can't feel bad about doing it. It's the way you do it. You have to still do it with love. You have to still do it with tenderness, because it is their only source of control.
And of independence, that. And they fight
yes.
that. You know?
Yes.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about parenting and caring for elderly parents. What do you do if you just don't have the information? Maybe this is now the time that you need to consider it if your parents are indeed getting older. Let's go to LaShawn. LaShawn calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, LaShawn. What's on your
mind? You're welcome. I just wanted to make a statement about making sure my concern is for such as siblings. Like you have, like for me, my mother had me at a later age, and I have sisters and brothers that are like 20, 19, 23, and 25 years older. And sometimes you assume that the eldest or the older siblings will come together to help take care of the parent when it doesn't happen that way. We had a lot of issues with the family where I always cared for my mom. But when she got sick, there was a lot. I found out that they really seemed like they didn't like me very much, or I don't know what it was, but they did not help me take care of my mom at all. And I did not know that my mom didn't have enough insurance to cover her funeral, burial. I guess because I was just taking so much time consumed with caring for her.
Well, LaShawn, let me ask Aurora about that also, because I think one of the issues that really comes up, and I've got about a minute before I take a break, is when should you start having the conversation with your siblings or the parents about care for them?
As soon as possible. Before anything even happens, if you can. But when you start seeing the signs, it's time to do that. But LaShawn, just understand this. Whatever they were doing, look at what your siblings were doing and try to create that pattern continually. If one was good at taking to the store, or if one was good at getting to the doctor's appointment, let them continue to do those things that they do. Caregiving is thrust upon some people, and there are people who take the lead. But you can make it easier for you if you look at what they did. Keep them doing those things in that mode, and try to keep the lines of communication open so you don't burn yourself out. Obviously, there has been some challenges for you, but I guarantee you, if you look around to your support systems that may be outside of your family members, close friends or whatever, that can chip in and help you out. And then go to those social service platforms that can give you some help where the gap needs to be filled. That's the best thing I can tell you. Create a web, a network of people around you that can take some of the stress off of you.
LaShawn, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to remind our listeners that after 8:30 tonight, as always, there will be information, resources posted on our website on WHUR.com, including the podcast for this conversation. Again, that'll be on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. We are going to continue this conversation after the break. Shakita, we're going to talk to you. Greg, we're also going to talk to you. Please do not hang up. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU, and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about parenting your parents, taking care of your parents as they get older. We're talking about some of the challenges and the resources involved. My guests are Aurora Delspin Jones. She is the Deputy Director for the D.C. Department of Aging and Community Living. Also Muriel Garr, financial expert and co-host of Beyond the Bling on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. A lot of folks wanting to get in on this conversation, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, the biggest issue for caring for parents may be the financial piece, Muriel. Talk to me about some of the challenges of addressing financial issues when you're trying to take care of aging parents.
You know, Aurora talked about it on the first segment. If you haven't had this conversation in the beginning, there's a lot of challenges around, particularly if you've got to move a loved one out of a home into your home or into another home, who's going to pay for it? If you end up having to stop working in order to care for that individual, how is that going to impact you overall? MetLife did a survey not too long ago that says if you stop working in your 50s to care for an aged parent, that is roughly $300,000 in lost revenue. And while this may sound harsh when we're talking about caring for a loved one, the reality of it is, particularly if we're looking at a intergenerational transfer of wealth and you've had to stop working to care for a loved one, then what are you passing on to your children when you get to the point of aging? Particularly, as one of the callers said in the first segment, it is more often than not that the caregiver ends up in worse shape than the person that they've cared for. So having that conversation, making sure that you've had a conversation around what's going to happen around a will, long-term care insurance while you're healthy enough to do it, who's going to take care of the bills, who's in the best shape financially to care for that loved one, helps to take some of the anxiety off of being able to care for that person.
Is there something that you can do right now? Let us say that you have someone who is gainfully employed. They're in their 40s. They have health insurance and,
That's not the same as long-term care.
Well, that's my question. What can you do if right now what kind of insurance resources can you sign up for a parent?
Long-term care insurance, as long as they're working and they are eligible to be underwritten. But one of the challenges that we have, particularly in families of color, and I know people don't like saying this, is that we don't sit down and have basic conversations about money, period, or any aspect of it, because insurance is an aspect of money. And we definitely don't talk about getting old and dying.
Yeah. So long-term care, one option. Are there others, or is that pretty much it?
From a standpoint of the healthcare aspect. Mm-hmm. And then the other things is, what does our investment portfolio look like? Have we prepared our investment portfolio for our aging process? And then as we look at that, are we smart in looking at that investment portfolio? As we age and we become ill, we do not want all of the money that we work for to be sucked into providing care. So there are provisions where, you know, there are spend down and transfer of asset provisions that we need to become sophisticated in discussing and understanding, so that we can structure the assets of our loved one so that when they do become aged and unable to care for themselves, that we're not going to deplete all of those resources, but we can pull from other resources such as Medicaid versus Medicare in order to care for them without depleting all the funds that are available.
Hey, before I go to the phone lines, anything you want to share about that, Aurora?
Well, you hit on Medicaid. I just want to say that Medicaid, is the primary payment for people who are older and needing care. Matter of fact, it is the only one. Other than that, you do have to spend down. And I think people need to understand that it is important to have a financial person working with them when they start looking at this kind of thing, because the first thing we think, okay, Medicare will do this, but you got to know that there are some things attached to that.
In a timeline.
And you can't transfer funds within 5 years.
5 years.
Okay,
so
you got to be careful.
Explain that real quick. What is, for those
five? Well, let me.
Well, we're both in this.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, within 5 years.
So the rule is that there's a 5 year spend down. So they're going to look at what your total asset base was 5 years before you start actually applying for the Medicaid services. So this is something that you can't all of a sudden, oh, mom got sick, now mom's going to have to, we're going to have to find this care, we don't have insurance, oh, but this is what mom has in assets, so let's go transfer her assets now and put them in a trust so that we can then use Medicaid versus liquidate her assets.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. That would have had to have been done 5 years before.
Which goes back to the conversation.
The conversation, and we need to plan to live long. But plan to live long, I would say, Aurora, plan to live long, fruitful lives and structure our finances that way. And then sometimes all fruits do spoil. So at a point that we get into that aging process, the plans are in place and there's no hardship on the family.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about taking care of our parents as they get older, some of the challenges and resources. Let's go to Greg calling from Baltimore County. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I have a comment to make, and also I have a question. I'm going to ask my question first. My situation is, I'm in my mid-50s, and my wife and I are in our mid-50s, and we both have challenging issues with our parents. One of my parents has Parkinson's, and her mother has dementia. So, but the other challenge to that is that we both have teenagers, so we are part of what's known as the sandwich generation. And so, my question is, how do you balance that? You can't, I have teenage kids, so I still have to be a parent, but also I want to be a caregiver and take care of my parents. I don't want to leave either one of them, you know, without care, you know, because
let's see what Aurora has to say. Aurora.
Okay, so it's a little bit difficult because you do have your children, you do have your parents, but here again is where I'm saying, if you create a network around you,
and organize. You have to organize the things that you do and how and who you do it with so that no one gets left out. Because the one that's going to feel guilty is you, because you're in the middle. You and your wife are in the middle of it. You feel responsible for both ends. You're going to have to organize because financially you got to be together for your children, okay? You got to organize, okay, finances too on the parent side just because of the conversation we just had. But what you can't do, what I caution you not to do, is to feel guilty about which one do I do it for. You got to do it for both of them. So first, love yourself, and then you got love to give out to both of them, both parents. Thinking organizational-wise, getting their structures, their financial structures in place, and then the financial structures in place and what you're going to do and have to do for your children if they're at the age like college is coming up or something of that nature. Just spending time with them is one of the key things that doesn't take a lot financially, but it may cost you all some emotionally, because we don't want to see our parents changing. So figure out what kind of things you can do that brings joy to your heart while you're sharing that time with them. And include your children. Now, you know, they're there. And we often look at children, if they're young, we say they're not capable of doing it. Not true. There are some things that they can do to help us out in this situation, and we ought to be preparing them, because when you get to the point that you need someone, they have the veteran experience then, if you've already ingrained this in and make them feel included in this portion, because it is their grandparents.
Great advice. Greg, thank you so much for talking to us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Roy calling from Maryland. Roy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Harold, how you doing?
Doing just fine.
Just tell you my experience with my mom. My mom had a stroke when she was 73 years old, and she lived an additional 18 years after that stroke. But during that entire care for her, you know, she rehabbed in the first couple of years. She was paralyzed on one side, but she was able to kind of do everything she needed to do for herself, and she still lived in the house by herself, you know, easily up until her late 80s. And, it's six siblings, and it kind of found it rewarding taking care of her. And I would go on record and say, I'm the youngest, but I probably got the highest income out of all my siblings. My older brother kind of took care of the finance side, but not one time out of all those years he ever called me for $100, $1,000, or even $20. So I don't know that side of it, but I know the care side of it. But now when she hit her 90s, she really got bedridden. And we kind of was all in and out taken care of.
Well, Roy, I've got a lot of folks on the line. I need you to finish your point.
Okay, I'm just going to say my point is, when I got to take care of her alone one time by myself, I learned a lot, and I found out that, you know, when people are paralyzed, that you kind of forget. They just don't want to lay in the bed. When she would call me and say, Roy, turn me on my left side, you know, and I thought she was getting ready to go to sleep. Then she'll call me again. They'll turn me on my right side. So mine is telling her to roll over, but she couldn't do things like that.
Let me stop you there, because one of the things that Roy said, Aurora, that kind of touched me. He has all of these siblings, and they have been helpful. But that isn't always the case. And I've heard, you know, horror stories where you may have several siblings, and yet sometimes these things just fall on one person. And I think that's probably one of the more difficult things for siblings to do when taking care of older parents is infighting, some of them not helping at all, when you may have, you know, just that one sibling who is doing all the work. How do you address that? And also financially, and this is for you, I'll have Aurora first, but for you, Muriel, how do you deal with that, you know, financially, when one person seems to be carrying? You first, Aurora. Thank you.
Every family is different, but, and as I said, we get thrust into this situation. It's just about communication. It's about observing what people are comfortable in doing. My brother helped me a lot, wouldn't get married. He didn't do anything the last 2 years of my mom's life. He said, if you're here, I'm here. But we had to come to terms on how this should be done, because I wanted things done a certain way because I was always the primary caregiver. So when he stepped in, I had to acknowledge, okay, he's doing it his way. He's doing the best. And Aurora, take that spot right now to get rest while he's doing it, because she's going to be all right with him. So it's about talking. It's about communicating. It's about accepting what you have stepped in to do, because you have the opportunity to walk away if you want to, but you've stepped in to do it and your heart is there. So try to reduce your stress while you're doing it and use what's good for others.
Muriel.
I mean, I'm sitting listening to this conversation and even to the callers, and it's just amazing because listening to the conversation and the callers, it would seem like this is just kumbaya and caring for aged parents. And here's the reality. Whenever something has to do with anything called money, I've not seen all of this kumbaya. There is this trust factor. There is, well, you're getting some and I'm not getting it, particularly in instances where individuals have resorted to be caregivers and are being paid for being caregivers. Then why are you getting the money to being caregivers? Why are you managing mom's money? Why are you managing dad's money? And so trust plays a really major role in that. And not having that conversation in the onset, outlining directives as who's going to do what, is really key, because those directives outlining who's going to do what doesn't mean that it's going to negate the confusion and the conflict, but it does help to settle it down a little bit.
Which again goes back to the early conversation when your parents are mentally, emotionally competent, and let us say that they do have some resources.
Right.
You do have to sit down
and have that conversation.
And have the conversation among the siblings, whether it's two or five or more.
And then it comes to the point that Aurora brought up, I think, in the first segment, because it's going to come a time when you're going to have to parent the parent. And that means they, in some ways, even though they're the adult, they may even become the dependent, where you're making all of those decisions for them. And that's got to be, and if there's more than one child, and I think it goes beyond just the siblings, because sometimes it's the other relatives outside of that, who everybody has an opinion of what needs to be done for caring for the aged one, and they're not there. And it's the relatives, and then it's their social circle, it's the church. Everybody's got an opinion, particularly on the care and then on the money. And there's got to be some clarity there.
Roy, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. Let's talk to Alan. Hey, Alan, calling from Chicago. How are you?
Alan, Carol, good news. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Boy, this couldn't be a more topical subject for me. My mother had a stroke more than a weekend, and dealing with that, we all really talked about some of the issues, some of the familiar issues to deal with, really trying to get everybody to readjust their minds. Some people, you got to tell them, hey, this person's been taking care of everybody. They've been the matriarch. But they can't take care of you. You have to take care of yourself. You actually have to help take care of them. And also, you got to realize that you have to be somewhat flexible. However you lived your life before your parent experiences it, your life is going to change. It's probably going to change a few times. You're going to have to read this a few times. You know, some days you're going to be going to work, you're going somewhere, you're not. You're going to end up taking them to the ER, you know, have to take them somewhere, and you got to get everybody on board, and you got to deal with all the issues. I mean, my mother's remarried, and that's a whole other issue, and my stepfather has children, and all that dynamic has played out, and trying to keep everybody at peace and, you know, sometimes stay in the hospital where you might want to sleep in your own bed. All those things come into play. And, again, they're going to change over time.
Okay.
That's a lot.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for sharing with me. Here's a question that I think a lot of people are asking. Is it better to have your parents stay with you or in a facility?
Wow.
Yeah.
It depends. Is it better? You want your parents with you as long as they can be with you. But there are some illnesses you cannot take care of. yourself. There are some things you're just not professionally qualified to take care of, emotionally or mentally qualified to take care of, and you're going to need some outside help. But then there are people who will take their parents into their home, live with them, and do the best job they can, and probably will outdo any facility because they are at home and they are at a place. So you have to make the choice based on your family dynamics and what you're able to do.
But, you know, Aurora, I think we have to be realistic, though. If it was a contentious relationship before, you know, and then if one more person tells me God will bless you, and I'm just being real transparent.
Yeah.
If one more person tells me God will bless you, and I know that sounds so harsh, but I think the worst thing that we can do to ourselves is put ourselves in a place where we know we are not being our best. It's like, and if I were to use a biblical analogy, it's like the person that gives a dollar but then wants to let everybody know that they gave a dollar versus the person that gave the best that they had because that's all that they had. And sometimes caring for a loved one, the best way of caring for a loved one is saying, you know what? I don't have the capacity. I don't have the emotional capacity to do this in my home. I will make sure that you have the best care somewhere else. But caring for you in my home is going to be detrimental both to you and to me. And I know, particularly in communities of color, because I'm walking this walk right now, and the feedback that I'm getting from people is not that of love. It is that, how dare you even think that way? That's so selfish of you. It's so self-centered. She did this and she was there, and you're going to want somebody to care for you. But the irony is, the conversation I've had with my children is they've both said, when you get to a certain age, don't worry, you're going in a home.
And I think two points. There are two points. I watched my great grandmother, one of my great grandmothers, which is that's a whole nother conversation that I indeed knew them well. You know, two great grandmothers and a great grandfather knew them very well. That's another conversation. But one of my great grandmothers who lived until, 100 or so. And I do mean or so. But she lived with her daughter and her husband, my great aunt and my great uncle, until she passed. Now, certainly they were in New York. I don't know the specifics, but I do remember that all was well. Okay, for the most part, I would argue that, you know, all was well, because she was a healthy 100-year-old person, even though she was blind. Now, you know, taking that with my mother, who took in her mother, and because she was ill. Now, she, you know, did not live too terribly long after she was taken in, but they had a really, really great another really great relationship. But like you said, if it is a contentious relationship, even if your mother or your father or whomever it is so completely healthy, but it's time for them to, they can't live alone because they may fall. Or as you said, it may not be good because they could be disruptive. Mm. They could be disruptive. And I think that's one of the things that, again, that needs to be discussed with your parents. And Muriel, you made a good point, but now with your children, they said, don't worry, you're going to be in a home. Is that cool with you?
And you know, it's really cool because we're having this conversation and they're looking at, you know, and it's got, we know, Mom, we know your personality. We know your attitude. You know, we know your personality. We know your attitude. We love you. We'll come and visit you. And, you know, and I really celebrate that, because I celebrate the honesty in which we can have that conversation. Now, conversely, I have a grandmother who we laid to rest earlier this year, just shy of in her mid-90s, who was cared for by my aunts up into her last day. It was a different relationship. But I do celebrate the fact that I can have the conversation with my son and daughter, and they're like, you going in a home, don't worry about it. I've told them, hey, long-term care insurance is already paid for. You don't have to worry about that. Paperwork is all in order. Now, part of their challenge is they don't want to sit down and have the conversation. They're like, oh, we'll talk about it later. And I'm like, we really need to sit down now so that when the time comes, you'll know what these directives are. But I made sure all of that stuff was in place so they wouldn't have the burden. And I know listeners and people think, gosh, that's a selfish dot, 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 dot. But there is a reality to life.
And let me go back to the question, because you ask which one is best.
Yeah.
So your question was just going to a choice, making a choice. You've had the conversation with your children, and they're telling you what they will do now based on your good physical health being present, right?
Because you're young,
but it
and
changes.
Vibrant right
things
now.
Could change. Yeah. And what I was trying to get to is, it depends on the family. It depends on the person. Now, being on both sides of the fence, I know them. My husband was in an institution. On a Friday at 5 o'clock, they told me we can no longer keep him in the hospital because he's not acute care. So we have to get him to an institution. Where was I going to go Friday at 5 o'clock? Well, give me until Tuesday and I can probably do something. I wanted to bring him home. I wanted to be superwoman number one. And I couldn't be because he had a trach. He was quadriplegic and nonverbal, and he had a stroke. So he went into a nursing home, and for 10 years he was there. I took care of him 10 years in a nursing home better than I could at home, but I was present in the nursing home. Now, with my mother, it was different. My mother, I took care at home because we didn't have the finances or the wherewithal, and I could not pull myself to put her in a nursing home when I dealt with dementia. But then what appeared on the scene after that was kidney failure. But with Medicare, Medicaid, what she got every month and what I had to put out, it was a struggle, but it was the best care method for me at that time. And that's why I say it's the choice is dealing with with whatever your family dynamics are, whatever your situation
right.
is. But we know, and I'm telling you, I've been sick and I've had to be cared for. All of them plans that I had and told my children about went out of the window. I didn't really want them to, because I'm a private person. I didn't want them to bathe me. I didn't want them to do anything. I am well now. Thank God I'm well now. But the things that I thought would happen and the things that I talked to them don't play out when you get married.
Hold on. But there's another piece to this, too, because when I asked the question, I said, which is better? But the continuation of that question, better for whom?
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because in both of these conversations, both of you have talked about better for the caregiver. But which is better for the person who needs to be cared for?
I think that depends. And I think,
exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
that's all what I'm saying.
And all that I'm saying is that individuals need to have the freedom, if you're a caregiver, to be able to make that decision without the societal guilt.
Well, that's
an
a cultural thing.
That's an
too,
opinion, and that's my opinion.
Yeah, because I agree. We want to be able to have these things be black and white, and for the Muriel Gars of the world, we would want to follow that outline.
Sure.
But for the the Aurora Delspin Joneses of the world, when she talks about being. On one hand, you say, well, I'm a private person because that's my reason. Other people say I'm a private person, and that's an excuse which could lead you down a road of inadequate care.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we need to kind of break that cycle, as you're suggesting, because if you want the best care that's possible and entrusted to the people that you love, you have to have those conversations, not just about finances, where you go, but who's going to bathe
right,
you.
Right. And it changes. I tell you, you have to let go and you have to let them do it, because you can't do it yourself.
Things do change. But part of it for me was based on, and my children have been watching over the last 7 years of me caring for a parent, and they've seen what it takes. And for me, you know, having that conversation and them like, you're going in a home, you know, that took a lot of stress and pressure off of me, because I'm like, you know what?
But you were okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The conversation I had with my father after his father passed and the struggles that he had, and I say this kind of tongue in cheek, but I said, you know, Dad, if I ever have to be in a position, because my grandfather was sound of mind, he was just physically deteriorating. And I said to my dad, I said, you know, if I'm in the same position with you, I said, don't act a fool.
That's a good thing.
I said, don't act a fool.
Right. Okay. Right. I told my brother when my mom,
real quick, because I only have about 30
went
seconds,
in the hospice. I said to him, you know, emotionally, I broke down. I knew what the rules were, but I broke down, and I said to you, brother, do what needs to be done, but you do it now because I can't do it. And whatever you choose to do, I'm okay with it because I'm relinquishing it to you.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. As I said, we will have resources on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. Aurora Delspin Jones, it has been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here with you all.
And Muriel, it is always good to have you here as well.
Well, it's always good to spend some time with you.
Thank you. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Thursday, July 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for the